Hello, and welcome to episode 104 of the Planning Period Podcast. You're at Break Room. I'm your host, Brad Schreffler. This week on the show, I'm joined by Jen Giffen. Jen is a 19-year educator and self-described voracious learner. She is based out of Canada, the York Region School Board to be specific. She has done English, math, special ed, student success, literacy, digital literacy consultant, and now is a teacher librarian. She's bounced around a lot, and I knew she would have lots to add to the show and the conversation we're having here. And I was not wrong. In this episode, Jen and I talk about her rise in understanding about the world of Twitter and PLNs, the weirdness of being involved in the edu Twitter space, what it's like being a teacher, the things that outside people don't understand about teaching, and the general struggles of teaching and living online. Before we get to the episode, I'd like to take a second to thank our sponsor for this episode, Tardees. Tardees is a new tardy tracking platform that makes it quick and easy for schools to process consequences when students are late to class. Tardees runs the Google Sheets add-on so anyone can set it up and works by scanning the ID numbers of late students into a Google form. Then, each night, Tardees sends a formatted PDF of the consequences with your school letterhead to be sent home with students for their parents to sign or given as a detention notice. Tardees is also significantly cheaper than other options on the market with no special hardware to buy and no per-student licensing fee. Tardees costs only $600 a year. You can learn more and start a 30-day free trial now by visiting Tardees.com. That's TardeeAse.com. So, sit back and enjoy episode 104 of the Planning Period Podcast, my interview with Jen Giffen. Hello, and welcome to this episode of the Planning Period Podcast. I am your host, as always, Brad Schreffler, and I'm excited today because I get to talk to somebody who I have known sort of peripherally for a while now, especially through VoiceEd and some of our Canadian connections and some people that we both know. And I don't know that we've ever actually talked on a podcast together before, which seems weird to me, but I don't think we have. And but it is the one and only Jen Giffen. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Brad. I thought the same thing when you invited me on. I'm like, have Brad and I ever been on anything? Have Brad and I met in real life? Like, I feel like we have, but I'm really good, generally, at remembering when I have met someone. I'll be like, yeah, I remember we saw each other. And I was like, and I couldn't pinpoint it. So I think we're not IRL friends yet.
I don't think we are. We're not even podcasting friends until this second. Right now.
Second.
And now we officially are. So that's a thing. And I'm okay with that.
So, me too.
So Jen, first of all, thank you for joining me. I appreciate you taking the time to make it onto the show and take a chance to talk to me. I want to ask you to introduce yourself, but I want to start with the only two like non-hashtag words in your Twitter bio, which is normally way more of a Shane Lawrence thing to do, but I just had to do it because I love it. I think it's awesome. The only two words in your Twitter bio are voracious learner. And yeah. So I love that. And with that in mind, could you give my audience a little intro to who you are?
Yeah, sure. So my name is Jen Giffen. I just started my 19th year in education. I have had a plethora of roles. And I think I switch around a lot. I get antsy, I guess, in one role for too long, and hence the voracious learner. I love to learn. I'm constantly learning. It's a little bit of an addiction. It's maybe a bit of a problem, but I've always worked in the York Region District School Board. I was born and raised in this board too. So I tell people all the time that I've been in the board since 1982, and then they sort of look at me funny. I started out as an English, math, and special ed teacher. Those were the three things that are on my ticket. And at the time, and then I sort of went from there. I opened a brand new school in our district. I became a student success teacher. I did the literacy teacher position for a while. What else have I done? I ping-ponged around there. And then I taught at that school that I opened for about 14 years, I want to say. It was 14 years. And then the last 3 years, I was a digital literacy consultant. Started out as a digital literacy resource teacher, and then we got consultantships. And I worked there. So I did a lot of work around modern learning. I did a lot of networking, a lot of connections, a lot of stuff around technology. During that time, I became sort of very googly. I got my level 1 and 2 Google certified educator, became a Google trainer. And then I was invited to the Washington, D.C. Cohort of the Google Innovator program in 2017. And that was really, really changed the trajectory of my life. At the same time as I started in that role as a digital literacy consultant, I started to realize that if I really wanted to learn, because I felt so ill-equipped, like imposter syndrome to the max when I started in that role, mostly because I applied knowing that people didn't often get it the first time they applied, or so I was told. And I thought, okay, I'm going to apply. I'm going to throw my hat into the ring. I'm going to get in here and tell them like, hey, look at me. I want this job. Knowing that two other positions, because it's a termed position, would come up in a few years. And I said, okay, I'm going to start. This is step one. I had 9 steps, number 9 being actually get the job. And at step 2, which is have the interview, I was offered the job. I'm like, no, I have like 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 still to do. I need to do these things. So I felt like I was sort of thrust into this this role that I felt I knew I could do because I rise to the occasion, you know, as we do in education, I think in general. And I thought, you know what, I'm gonna try to reach out and build my network a little bit so that when I have questions, it's not just, you know, at the time there were 8 of us on the team that I can rely on, but we certainly have to go elsewhere because if we're the leaders in sort of this digital realm, if we're going to be the leaders in modern education, we need to not only be drawing from our own, you know, well, so to speak, we need to go elsewhere. And so I really started out on Twitter and I thought, okay, I'm going to really leverage the power of Twitter. And at the time I had like, I was following about 400 people. I was, I think I had 250 somewhere around there followers myself. And I thought, okay, how can I use this to my advantage? Everyone says how great this PLN is on this digital PLN. And so I started listening to a bunch of podcasts and I started reaching out to people on Twitter through that. I started doing a whole bunch of Twitter chats. Matt Miller of the Ditch That Textbook fame ran his very first Ditch Summit, which was, if you've never done Ditch Summit, it's awesome. Every year he does them just before the winter holidays, so in December, and then again he does one in the summer, or maybe it's late June. Is it June? No, it's in July because I was traveling. I could only do some of them, and I had just started wanting to sketch note as well. I was sort of like, as you can see, I was sort of all over trying all these new things, and I thought I'm going to sketch them. So I would sketch one and I put it out there and people liked it. And then, you know, the people who were speaking, the Ditch Summit is he would interview people on, he would interview them, put them on YouTube. And I would sketch what I learned and off we would go. And I thought, you know, if I could practice for an hour a day or however long these were, it actually ended up taking me like 3 hours to do the sketches, but whatever, that's beside the point. And then, you know, the speakers who are like, as they call them, like the edulebrities started liking them and they started, you know, following me and retweeting things. And I was like, oh my gosh. And all of a sudden in the 9 days of the Ditch Summit, my PLN grew from 250 people following me to over 600. And I was like, wow, this could, and I was getting in conversations and I was learning about new people and seeing different aspects of the world and how we sort of, how we do things in education in different ways. And I thought this could be really cool. So then I just sort of continued with that. And then I realized, you know, I could present at certain conferences and then imposter syndrome was always there, but I started to realize that having a voice in this field doesn't mean you have to necessarily be, you know, the know-it-all, the expert, but just taking a chance and sharing stories. And I love, as you can tell, to tell stories. So I went down that road for about 3 years and I loved it. And then with the political unrest here in Ontario last year and with class sizes, I'm in secondary school. So with the class sizes shrinking, I thought, oh, do I really? Because we were placed at the end of our term on a surplus list. So you weren't guaranteed back in your school. And I thought, okay, do I roll the dice? Do I wait another year? I had another year left in my term. And I thought, well, I'm just going to see what's out there. And an opportunity presented itself at the school that I ended up at this year for a full-time teacher librarian role, which I thought really lent itself nicely to my past with my, like, sort of my tech expertise, but also my love of literature and English. Like, I loved, and I'd been in the library a little bit. And I thought, you know what, this could be a really cool stepping stone out of this. It was a school that's 15 minutes from home. I've worked with the staff a ton. I loved the admin team. I really liked the community. And I thought, maybe this is sort of, you know, kismet and it's meant to be. And so now I am a full-time teacher librarian at Richmond Hill High School in York Region still. And I'm loving it. Every day is a new adventure. And I feel like I did like that girl who was on, well, I'm on step 1, not on step 9. And one of my girlfriends gave me a sign that I have now in my office says, I'm pretty sure I have no idea. And I live by that every day. People come and ask me questions, be it students or staff or admin. And I'm like, I don't know, but I'm going to find out. And that was exactly how I started my life as a digital literacy consultant. I thought, you know what? Someone would ask me like, can you come and present this at my school? Or can you come teach me how to do this? And I'd be like, I absolutely can. And that night I would get home. And my husband's like, what do you have to do tonight? I'm like, I've got to learn how to do this because I've got to teach someone how to do it tomorrow. And we sort of go. So that's basically who I am. I'm someone who loves to learn. I sort of throw myself in wholeheartedly. And I love to talk to people. I'm extremely extroverted. I definitely draw from the energy of others. I have a certifiable case of FOMO in every realm of my life. And yeah, outside of school, I'm a wife. I'm a mom of three little boys, which people can't understand how I do it. I have a 9-year-old and 7-year-old twin boys. So it's a busy, busy life. But I love what I do and I love the excitement and the pace. So that's where I am. That's me.
Huh. Wow. I don't very often interact with people who I feel like talk as fast and as much as I do.
I thought I was slow.
with the podcast, I always feel like, oh, okay, I've got to like slow down my own speaking. I was accused today of speaking faster than someone could think, actually. Mm-hmm. And I have to like slow down. I like intentionally do that. And now you are like, you and I are like, we're going to go in 1,000 directions. I can already tell. It's going to be great. So I only have like 700 questions off of what you just said.
Super.
It's not many. We'll get through them. No problem.
Sure. We've got a couple weeks, right? We're good.
Yeah. We got all the time in the world. I want to start with just this one, just kind of a broad question. Cause mm-hmm. I feel like you, for lack of a better term, suffer from one of the same problems I do, which is I'm interested in absolutely everything.
Oh yeah.
Like there's not a topic that comes across my desk.
Yeah,
absolutely. I have used that phrase for myself a million times. So how do you, in a world, like especially being involved in a PLN, and the one thing you didn't mention, I don't think, is the podcast that you also run as well. And I mean, I'm sure there's probably other things you didn't mention too, but that's the one I know for sure. Yeah. But I think, how do you balance? Like, cause I feel torn in the sense of like, I enjoy being a jack of all trades. I enjoy having sort of a base knowledge in a lot of different things and having a pretty decent knowledge in a lot of different things. But at the same time, I feel like in the Twitterverse and in a PLN environment, and especially when you start to talk about the speaking circuit and going out to conferences and things like that, it really, a lot of it comes down to niching down into what your specialty is. Mm-hmm. And that hurts me a lot. And I struggle with that. And I wonder, how do you balance sort of this like general fascination with every part of what we do and also trying to cultivate a voice and a presence that people go, oh, Jen Giffen, she's that person.
Yeah. I don't know that I'm there. Or maybe I don't know. That's a hard question, Brad, because I was approached once about writing a book. So when are you going to write a book? And I said, I'm not writing a book. I said, I'd like to have written a book. I don't want to write a book. Like I'd like that to be in my past. I'd like to have it, but I'm not there. And someone said, well, why not? And I said, because I don't have the depth. I'm more of a breadth girl. I like to sort of dabble all over. And I think if you're going to write a book or anything like that, you need to go deep. But when it comes for me, I guess my depth goes into education technology and my passion for students who struggle, be it a student who's disengaged from school, be it a student who has a learning exceptionality. And I think that's where I go. So when I go to conferences and present, for example, it's always around something techie. Eric Kurtz, for example, you may know Eric from his Control Alt Achieve blog. He's like the king of Google and a good friend of mine. I met him a number of years ago at ISTE and we hit it off and we chat monthly. And I remember asking him like, how can you do so much? And he's like, well, I'm only Google. Like if you look at anything I've ever produced, it's only in Google. And I thought, oh yeah, maybe I need to get in that niche. And I thought about it, but I'm like, no, there's no one thing I want to go and dive that deeply into. So I sort of learn a little bit. And then I'm like, okay,
does that sound like a nightmare to you? Like it does to me. Like I'm just imagining the nightmare that my life would be if all I ever talked about was one thing, or even if it was five, if all I ever talked about was five things, I still feel like I would be miserable within a month.
Oh, I 100% agree. That said, I think because we know of all the facets in education, we feel that way. The one thing I talk about constantly is education. And because I can go so many ways in that, it keeps me happy. But if you talk to my friends and family, they're like, oh yeah, all she'll do is talk to us about education. Oh, she'll talk to you about, you know, how kids learn, and she'll talk to education. So I don't know if it's, I think in the world of education, I don't have the niche, but I think outside the world of education, we do. I don't want to be that one person. I don't want to be single tracked. I like having the dimensions that I have. And some days I run really deep in some, and others I don't. Like, I'm sure there's people on Twitter now who are like, oh, you used to talk about all these great ed tech things, and now like they're going to see a lot more about like reading and library programs, and because that's where my passion lies. And at the end of the day, I have it out there because I'm like, well, I want to learn this. So I'm sure there's someone else who will want to talk about this, because I don't think everyone lives in that sort of one room or one box consistently. And it's okay to travel around. I think if we want to best serve our students, we're going to not just focus on one thing, because our students don't have one need.
That was a really great answer. You've got me thinking. I think I spend so much time. I mean, my personal obsession is podcasts. It's insane. I listen to 20-ish hours a week at this point of podcasts. It's a problem. It's like, I never catch up. It's awful. I also never stop listening. Like, I feel like I listen constantly and I still never catch up, and I don't know what to do, except I already listen at 1.5 time. I can't go any faster. I don't know what to do. Anyways, that's my personal problem. But you've got me thinking now, like, okay, so I'm not niching down within the education space. Mm-hmm. You're right, I'm not. But outside of that, it's a regular occurrence that if I'm at a party and one other teacher is there, I am, boom, laser in. And yeah. I am going to have a really deep conversation that, given how much I have probably had in terms of like beer, I probably should not have that deep of a conversation.
Yeah.
But I'm still going to, because that's all I think about all the time.
Yeah.
But I guess I always look at it let me rephrase this and tell me how you feel about this, because this is kind of what you just made me think. I wonder if my belief that I'm not niching down is because I'm so close to it that it looks like there's a million different niches within education, but the reality is I'm just obsessed with education. And that is still a niche within its own, even though there could be more smaller niches in that space. Does that make any sense to you?
That's totally what I was getting at. Like, we don't, well, it doesn't seem that, I was trying to think of it when you were saying it, there was the adage about that the fish doesn't feel the water. Or do you know what, have you ever heard that before? There's a saying about, or the fish doesn't know they're wet because they're always in the water.
Anyway, yeah, does a fish think they're wet or something like
that? Yeah, I can't remember what it is. It escapes me right now, but I think it's that. Like, maybe we do feel that we're not a specialist in any way, but then other people look at you. Like, I meet people all the time. They're like, oh, you know so much. I can't believe it. I'm like, really? I don't. And when I tell people about the imposter syndrome that I feel, or when I feel like, oh my God, I'm a bit of a fraud, or when I meet someone for the first time and I'm absolutely in awe. I remember being at ISTE last year when it was in Chicago and meeting Ann Cosma. I don't know if you know Ann, but she used to work. She was an educator in California. She now works for Flipgrid. And I was standing talking in the Flipgrid booth to a few of the guys that I knew and I'd met the year before. And all of a sudden I could see her sort of sneaking up to say hi. And I turned around. I was like, in my brain, I'm like, oh, I'm about to meet Ann Cosma. And I was so excited. And I turned and she's like, hi, Jen Giffen. I'm Ann Cosma. I'm like, don't you introduce yourself to me. I will introduce myself to you. Like, it's a symbol of respect, right? Like, and to me, I was like, I'm just some like little Canadian, you know, talking about education on Twitter. She's like, Ann Cosma. And when she said the same thing. And for me, I was like, I would never think that someone like Ann would feel that way. Or, you know, with other people that I've met, I was, I fell in love with the HyperDocs handbook a couple of years ago when it first came out, and I took their course online and then ended up meeting the girls at various conferences. And this past summer I went to California, for a conference being put on by Digital Promise Global. And when I was there in California, I wanted to go to Napa, and I reached out to Lisa Highfill, who's one of the authors of the HyperDoc handbook. She goes, I love Napa, let me take you. And so 3 years later, I'm literally sitting in a vineyard with my husband and Lisa, who's driving my husband around, giving us this private tour of Napa. I was like, how did this happen? And I told her that. I was like, if you had told me 3 years ago, I'd be sitting here with you, because to me, she's kind of royalty, especially in the Google world and the ed tech team world that I'm part of. And she's like, what are you kidding me? I'm just like this normal person. And I just like, and I find that so funny when we look at what we, like you said, like we have these specialists and we see people as these like, oh, well, but you know so much about that. I don't know if any of us in education, well, there's a few, but I don't know if a lot of us in education sort of feel that, that we're this, this entity that other people see us as. I think that there's a certain presence that we get on, be it on social media or being it through word of mouth or on podcasts, right? I'm heard a lot and people know me a lot and they know Kim a lot because of Shooks and Gif, right? Because of our podcast. And I've met people that they're like, oh, you're Jen Gif, you're virtual Gif. I'm like, yeah, I'm Jen. That was going. And it's because I listen to the podcast. And I think when we put ourselves out like that, sometimes we're seen in a different way. That's, I don't know. I don't know how to, I never know how to talk about it without sounding like completely full of myself, or do you know what I'm saying, Brad? Like it's just,
yeah, no, 100%. It is hard to like, it's kind of a running joke, and my dad has made it on the podcast, so I don't feel as bad about making this joke now that he's made it publicly, but like it's a running, because of the work I do with Voice Ed, it's a running joke with my family that I'm a big deal in Canada. And it's like, on one hand, I'm 100% kidding. Like that's not at all what I actually believe. But on the other, it's like, yes, I am on this like Canadian radio network, and this guy out of Florida that has no purpose being on a Canadian radio network, just making a podcast out of the guest room in his house. Like that doesn't make sense, right? Like I'm saying this hyperbolically, but I'm just a teacher that is making a podcast out of the guest room of his house. And that has an upgrade because I used to make it on my kitchen table. And I don't, and but at the same time, it's like I do know an excessive amount of people in Canada, and I'm confident that I could get from one part of Canada to any other part of Canada and have seven couches to sleep on in 100%. Between if I needed to.
100%
like,
you would.
And like it's a very weird thing. Yeah. No, no, that has always been my experience with everybody from Voice Ed. But it's crazy. It is this odd, like, it's this odd ego trip combined with the like the FOMO, but also the imposter syndrome that you mentioned. Huge. Like it's this weird, because I feel like the more I'm involved in this space, the more I realize I'm missing and the more inadequate I feel. And like it just is this weird ball of just nothing is actually right or predictable in the world, and I don't know what's happening.
I think there needs to be, with just teachers in general, I think we compare ourselves a lot to other people, to what's going on around us. Like you see, and social media is like, as much as I love the grams and Twitter and, you know, I feel that you see something, you're like, oh, I'm not doing enough, or I'm not going deeply, and they look like they're doing that. And there's this sort of facade that we talk about with our students, right? Like, oh, it's not reality. And remember there's this, but because, and we know that at a deep level, but I think that doesn't stop us from putting the pressure on ourselves that we could always up our game. And I think we need to be really cognizant of that. And I think we need to be a little bit forgiving of ourselves. Like if we have a week where it's like, yeah, I'm not going to get that done, or I'm going to function at a level that might be below what I would like to, that sometimes is okay.
Yeah. I agree with you. We could all benefit from that, man. All right. I want to get to my normal questions and we're already like 20 minutes in, and I honestly just want to keep talking and riffing. But before I do that, I cannot move past this because I'm obsessed with podcasts without talking about Shooks and Gifts. So can you give me the pitch to Shooks and Gifts and how that has been for you in that journey of that show?
So Shooks and Gif is a podcast that I do with my good friend and colleague, Kim Polishuk. Kim and I were both digital literacy consultants together. She's still in the role that I left. We debated, we're like, what are we going to do when I leave the role and how are we going to make it work? But we do, we sort of, you know, we record now in evenings and either go to each other's houses or find a common spot or do it sort of over Google Hangouts if we can. It was born from, I'm also like a ridiculous podcast listener. I've had to cut down. My old job had me commuting 40 minutes each way a day. So that would give me a good, you know, like hour and 20 minutes, depending on traffic, in the car, plus going from venue to venue. My new commute is 26 minutes total. every day. Yeah,
I couldn't survive like that. No. I don't even know what I would start walking to school just to like have more time.
I do live in Canada, not Florida. So it's not as...
Oh yeah. That would be a little harder for you. It was 88 degrees last night at 9 o'clock. I don't know. Yeah. Is that what you had?
So that's Fahrenheit. And it's been great talking to you. I'll see you later. No, it's not that here. Actually, no, we've had some really nice weather. We were in the, well, what's 15, like 60, 65, 68?
Yeah, 15's in the 60s. Yeah. So I've also gotten really good at Celsius and Fahrenheit conversions.
Yeah. I do a lot of that. I also tend to, when I talk to my American friends, I drop all the U's and all the words that I have just so that you guys understand. Listen, you right, can you hear it? Color. See? No U.
There you go.
I did it.
There you go.
Yeah,
but not on a boot.
No, not on a boot. Not on a boot. Yep. I do that with miles. I'm really good at my miles or my kilometers to miles conversions. At any rate, I don't remember what you're talking about. I totally lost.
Drive, podcasting, oh, yeah, and then so, eventually Shooks and Gift.
Shooks and Gift. Thank you. So we... I can't listen as much, but I still find time. Like I will, when my kids and I go out and we're, you know, at the park or whatever, and they're playing or we're on a walk, I'll throw in earphones and listen that way. There's always ways you can do it. I have cut down. I've had to pare down some of the ones that I used to listen to. My new rule of thumb of if an episode's over about 40 minutes, I listen at 1.7. And if it's over 40 minutes, I'm like, nope, this is too big a commitment unless it's like a really good thing. I've also shifted. Like I listen to a couple more like library podcasts now just to do some learning that way. I do listen at a quick speed. The only one I cannot listen to quickly is my own. And I do listen to my own podcast. It was, I didn't for a long time. And then Tom Covington, who does Tosa's Talking Tech, he's out of California as well. Actually, he worked with Ann Cosma in California. He said to me, he goes, well, why wouldn't you? If you're writing a blog, wouldn't you read your blog posts before you made them public? Like don't you proofread your work? And I'm like, yeah, I would proofread my work actually. So I said, okay, well, I'll start listening. And it's funny because I do listen and I actually find myself laughing at Kim and I. I'm like, oh my gosh, because I see the humor in what we're saying and the sort of the backstories at any rate. We started it because I was a really big podcast listener. Kim finally this season admitted that she does not listen to podcasts at all. Like I fill her in on everything. But that's not true. She listens to like the West Wing podcast stuff, but no teaching when she turns off when she's in the car. And
that must be nice.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe. I don't know. She doesn't ever turn off though. I don't believe that for a second. She's as bad as me. And I said to her, I really want to start one. And we started and we actually have a keynote together called Shooks and Gift, the keynote instead of Shooks and Gift, the podcast. And it's having a hog, give it a go. And it's about taking risks in education because that's the premise of our podcast was when we started it, I said, you know, We used to sit at conferences together and people would listen to our banter back and forth at lunch or whatnot. And they'd be like, oh my gosh, I could listen to you guys all day. Cause we just go back with ideas back and forth. Oh, did you hear this tool? And oh, there's this. And oh, I would solve this problem that way. And people would say, you guys should start a podcast. I would totally listen to you. We're like, oh yeah, okay. Shooks and Gift the podcast. And be sort of a joke. And then Matt Miller released his Ditch That Textbook podcast, which was like 10 minutes in the car. It wasn't edited. It was really rough. And I was like, oh, if Matt can do that and he's built like this sort of like empire of that has the look of being really well constructed and branded. And I'm like, if he can go a little bit unpolished, then why couldn't we? And our thing is we didn't want to spend a lot of money. We didn't, you know, before we went on air, Brad, I was telling you that until this season, it's our third season, we used to use the mic from my, like the headphones and the mic on my like iPhone earplugs. Like that's what we use. And we would wrap it around my water bottle. And then I would get thirsty and be like, darn it, I want a drink, but my mic. And then I just happened to win a Yeti last June at ISTE. And now we use that because we can. But we didn't want to spend a lot of money. We didn't want to buy a domain. We didn't want to, like, you know, like we want something that can be completely replicable by teachers. So when I heard Matt and I heard about Anchor and like the quote, real podcasters always guffaw at me that we use it, but I'm like, yeah, it just works for us. I called Kim or I pinged her on Google Hangouts. It was March break and like our spring break. And she went and she was in one of the Carolinas, I think North Carolina. And I said, okay, I want to start a podcast. I'm ready for this. I want to do it with you, but if you're not into it, that's totally fine. And here's what I think we should do. And I said, you know, we'll just be like little ahas we have, like, oh, I learned this tool or I know this trick. And we'll just share that. Like we banter 30 minutes every other week or every, at the time it was every week. What do you think? And she's like, yeah, you know what? Let's give it a go. And so then eventually, you know, Shooks and Gift, give it a go became our sort of tagline. And then I said, okay, great. And then I sent her like a logo. I'm like, I've been working on this. What do you think? And then I was like, okay, I've started a website and I've opened our Anchor account, and all of a sudden it went. And we went from the end of spring break until June as our first season. And then we went every other week the last season. And now we're at about every other week. Again, this season, sometimes we might go every instead of two to three. And I know they say to be consistent, but that just, it's just not going to work. We have to let go of the perfection in that. But yeah, we talk ed tech. Last season, we did something called midterms where we interviewed some other people in the education technology world. We had people on to chat back and forth, which funny enough, we thought would be like a really big hit, but they were some of our lower listenership. And we don't know if it's because it was the time of year or because people liked the banter of just Shooks and Gif going back and forth. And we have no idea. We're not doing it this year, not because of that, but just because the scheduling for that is going to be bananas with the way that we are running things. But yeah, we chat ed tech and we have a lot of fun. And what you hear is what you get. Kim does edit it a little bit. We originally agreed there would be no editing. I didn't want to do any editing. I was like, I just don't want to. I want it just to be in there. And then she was like, well, because she's even more perfectionist than I am. And so she'd go through. And so now I can curse a little bit and not worry about, you know, offending people. Now I just don't watch myself. But I do listen to myself. I do have to slow myself down. I listen to, like I said, all podcasts in 1.7. And there was once that I was listening to people in 1.2 without realizing it. And I was like, oh, why do they sound so sad? And they were sort of sharing sad news about like a transition in their jobs. And I voxed both of them. And I was like, guys, you sound so sad. And then I went back to listening and I realized I was on 1.2 and I sped them up and I voxed them back. And I was like, yeah, so no, it wasn't you. It was the fact that my podcast app had slowed you down. And it was very funny. But yeah. Yeah, no, but
it is. That is a weird thing, right? Like when you're so used to listening on 1.0, because I have like two podcasts I don't listen to at speed. And it's just the one is Very Bad Wizards, which is a philosopher and a psychologist. And they're way too smart to take it 1.5.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like
yeah.
I can't. I have to process what you're saying.
Yeah.
And they're still goofy and having a good time, but I still need to think about what it's saying. Yeah. And then the other one is Radiolab, because that's just a piece of beautiful audio art.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to do that any injustice by putting it at speed. So that gets regular speed.
Yeah.
But other than that, like everything's 1.5. And then occasionally, like my wife will be in the car with me. And like, so I just had episode 100. You're 104. I had episode 100 a few episodes ago. And it was with my... Thank you. It was with my dad. And so I was like, hey, would you want to listen to this on this drive around? She's like, yeah, actually, I'd really like to listen. She doesn't listen to any of my show. But no, she listened to the one episode.
Neither does my mom. So there you go.
So she listened to the one episode and she was like, all right, let's do this one. And then she made me put it at 1 point, like regular speed.
Oh,
and
right.
I was like, God, this is so slow. Yeah. Even in real life, it didn't feel this slow. And I lived it. I don't know what's happening.
I feel like I function at a different speed than a lot of people. Like I listen to audiobooks a lot too. And I think that's why I'm able to listen to podcasts as quickly as I do, or at the speed at which I do. I've been listening to audiobooks for 10 years at least. When I had my first son, I was sleep deprived. If I wanted to read before bed, forget it. So I would listen when I was out on walks with him. And yeah, anything that slows down, like that goes, like I can't function. I just actually literally before we got on, like maybe 10 minutes before we got on, I was listening to Educated by Tara Westover. And I got to the very end and I was so used to her voice that I was listening at 3x speed. Now I only do that when I want to get through it quickly and I have the actual print in front of me because that's how quickly my eyes will read and then hearing it goes. But yeah, I can go pretty quickly. And my kids, when they're in the car, if I listen to a podcast, they're like, what is this, mama? It sounds like the Chipmunks. I'm like, kind of what
it is. Even like when it's like we're leaving someone's house late at night and I know she's just going to sleep in the car, she still can't even fall asleep with my sister. She's like, how do you listen to this? It's giving me a headache and it's been 30 seconds. I was like, well, it's actually been a minute and a half in my time.
That's right.
Time is relative.
Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah. See, I don't read fast. I read so slowly. Mm-hmm. I'm a very, very slow reader. And I read a lot as a kid. I loved reading, but I read so slowly.
Yeah.
But I comprehend a lot faster than that. So I can listen to a podcast that is going to – I can get through an audiobook. Like, I know, it's daunting. It's like, 15 hours of audio. Yeah, but it would have taken me a heck of a lot longer than that to read it. Like, I'll take it. Done.
Yeah, I love listening. Which is funny because I'm not always auditory. Like, I don't want to sit and listen to a lecture.
No.
But how is it different? How is it different than a podcast?
I've thought about this a lot, and I've talked about it on a couple other shows. I talked about it with Mike Washburn and Glenn Urban, and I've talked about it with a few other people too. But I think the difference is when you're listening to a podcast, like, so anybody listening to this right now, it is you and I talking, and they feel like the third person in the conversation, right? Like, I've had multiple people that have talked to my talked about my podcast with me, and I feel the same way about the podcast I listen to. Like, I feel like I know the podcast host.
Totally.
So I go to a conference and I see Matt Miller and Casey Bell and Chris Nessie. And it's like, guys, I haven't seen you since last week. And they're like, I've never even met you. I have met those guys, to be fair. Yeah. But I just, like, in general, it's like I listen to a podcast and it's you're directly in my ears. You're right here. Like, I'm listening to you and it feels intimate. It feels connected. And I was talking to somebody even, I think, maybe it was Steve Isaacs recently or someone, but talking about, like, the difference between that and even like a Twitch stream or a YouTube channel, watching those, I'm cognizantly aware of the millions of other people listening or watching that same thing, right? Like, if I'm watching a Twitch stream, a live stream of something, I can see how many people are watching with me. This is not a one-on-one interaction, but a podcast is while I'm alone in the car on my way to work, and it's just me and the host. And it feels truly, like, intimate in a way that I don't think anything else does. And I think that's why podcasting is such a powerful medium.
Yeah, I would agree with you. There's a lot of podcasters that when I've met them, I've been like, oh my God, I totally know who you are. And it's to the point where I'm like, they must think I'm so creepy. Like, I totally stalk them.
Well, and you feel like you have inside jokes with them, right? Like, because they have all these jokes on their own show. And so now it's like this inside joke with people they've never met, right?
Or have you ever had that, like, there's something, sometimes like Kim and I will throw like a joke and have a couple episodes and we forget about it. And then we'll meet someone at a conference and they'll throw this joke out and we're like, hey, what are you talking? They're like, you know, an episode. And we're like, we've totally forgot about that. So jokes that we like didn't think anything of really latch on to some listeners.
Yeah.
And I love that. Like, I love when people reach out. Like, it for us, our goal was, let's do 10 episodes and we'll hope for 500 listens. Like, let's just go with that. Let's see how we can do. And we're at, there are almost 40 episodes, and I want to say we're at 30,000 downloads at this point, which we were like, that just blew all of our expectations out of the water. And we're like, who is listening to us? Because I know for a fact my mom doesn't listen to me, because she said, hey, Jennifer, I want to get into podcasts, but not yours. She literally said that to me last week. I'm like, I'm not really sure how to take that, but okay.
Like, I guess my dad's a former educator, so I think that helps. Yeah, like, no, that's part of the reason he does it. He was a principal until 2 years ago.
So. Oh, see? So not my mom so much, but anyway. I think there is sort of this community that builds. And what I love about the community too is when you meet another podcaster and you've been on a show together, you have this sort of like a camaraderie that you wouldn't have otherwise. You're just like, you've shared this special moment that's forever archived in the world of, you know, sound somewhere. That,
well, there's also a particular kind of crazy that it takes to start a podcast. Mm-hmm. And I think that if you find other people that have the same crazy you have, like, it just clicks. There's just no way around that.
Totally. And it's funny too, the different levels that you'll have. Like, I've been to conferences and seen people like with the setup with the, like, the boom and the mic and the this and the that. And I'm like, I'm walking around with my iPhone and my iPhone headphone. Here, can you just record into this sometimes? But yeah, there's like this sort of love, and I don't know. I think it's the want to share, because I'm big into that. Like, I'm big into sharing with other teachers, and it's part of one of the things I love about Chooks and GIF is someone says, oh, I tried that in my classroom and it totally worked. I'm like, that's fantastic. Because sometimes you don't feel like, especially in the job as a consultant, you didn't always see it in the day-to-day how you would have an impact. Mm-hmm. And I think that's important. It's one of the reasons I really am not a fan of teachers pay teachers. I get the site. For what it's worth, like, I've worked really hard on what I've done, and I want to get something for that, and people put it on and then they, you know, will sell it to other educators. And I could see myself going and maybe putting something on there if I was proud of it. Not that I'm not proud of my work, but you know what I mean? Like, if I felt so inclined to do that. But I also would hope, not I would hope, I know that if all of a sudden you reached out and said, oh, Jen, I saw your thing on Teachers Pay Teachers, I'd be like, yeah, I'm just going to send it to you. Like, there's absolutely no way.
Yeah, that is my problem.
I'm selling that to someone I know. And Noah Daniel and I talked about this, who I absolutely adore. Noah, she's one of my favorite people on the face of the earth. If I meet someone that they don't love Noah, I can't be friends with them, because those people are not normal. But she and I were talking about her bobs, and she's like, yeah, people are saying I should sell them. I'm like, yeah, absolutely. She said, you should have something, you should market it. And she's like, oh, but I feel bad. I'm like, no, it doesn't mean you always have to sell it. But if someone knows you and they reach out, give it to them. If they don't, why not make, you know, a dollar or two for the efforts that you've had? But I do think we need to be giving, because at the end of the day, we all have the same aspirations. And I don't think it's, if we're getting into teaching to be a millionaire, it's to help kids. So,
well, and I think there's a balance, right? Like, I think there's a balance of like, I don't know. This is about to go in some like really like questionable territory right now, but I don't even care anymore. If you look at someone like Noah, right? So let's just take her as the ultimate example, right? She talks about her bobs and she has her own podcast, which is the P3, which is entirely based on one of her bobs, which by the way, have you done the P3?
I have. Yeah, I was her.
It's a torturous experience.
Yeah. So it's you can't put it's a lot of thought into awful. It. We did it live.
No, I spent like 2 months planning out my P3. Like, it was awful. It was terrible.
Yeah. Noah, we hate you.
It's
we,
awful.
We
it's,
love and it's, hate it's, you.
It was like one of the most torturous experiences ever. It was insane. But it's also putting, I've gotten my students to do it. And that project is publicly available. Like, it's out there at this point. Like, you can listen to a podcast, get the project, and have your kids do it. It's that simple.
Yeah.
But that's not to say that she needs to make all of her bobs free, right? Like, I think there's a balance of like, okay, listen, I know that what I'm doing has value, and I hope you see that and try this out and see if you see that value. And then, like, I also have put a ton of my time and energy into this, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I do Google add-ons, and I design and develop Google add-ons and Google stuff. And so, like, there's stuff out there for Sheets and Docs that you can get for free from my website or from the Google App Marketplace or whatever.
Yeah.
It's all out. There's a lot of it that's out there for free, but there's also products that have done a lot more coding, a lot more background work that are for sale. And if you want to buy those, they're out there, you know? So I think there's a balance to that part of it.
Yeah. I agree with you, Brad, because if I think about that, like, I have a couple of friends who have done the same things, written extensions, written add-ons, and they monetize some, not others. And I've talked to them, and I don't know if you know John McGowan. He was the guy behind GMath, and which then was bought by TextHelp, which became Equatio. That's his product. And he's the programmer behind it. And he recently, actually did a whole blog post. He's left TextHelp now. He's off on his own as recently. And he did a whole blog post about what the life of a programmer. And yeah, I want, being a former teacher, is like, I want to offer teachers things, and I know they don't have a lot of money, but I also have to make a living, and I have to put food on the table, because I'm not in that realm anymore. I'm not in education. So this is how I do it. And I get that you don't have a lot of money, but I also can't, you know, live on scraps with my wife and children and whatever. Mm-hmm. And it was a really well thought out, quite long blog post, but I sat and I found myself really engaged through the whole thing. And a lot of it, he said, was Spawn. He was listening. He's a fan of our show and a good friend of Kim and I. And we were talking about the new ability in Google Forms to recycle old questions. And that was based on an add-on called Form Recycler that John McGowan wrote and has, like, sort of, you know, done for years now. And he monetized it, if you had more than, I forget, 500 recycled questions or something, like, astronomically high a month. And some people paid it, and then Google took it, so now no one will ever use it again. And he talked about that, what it's like to, and then hearing on a show that he listens to with two friends, so we started to talk about this great new feature, and he was like, guys, that's mine. And he said he felt gutted. And but then, of course, we were like, and it all comes from John McGowan, who's the smartest guy we know. And then he's like, and I was back, but he's like, it was just sort of this moment of, I knew that my product was going to be gone. People wouldn't really buy it anymore. And now to hear friends talk about how great the new one is, and then to pull me back and be like, oh, how great. Like, it's that roller coaster of, and I do agree. I think we need to compensate, but I also, there's a fine line for me and there's a fine line for me in just what I'm able and willing to do. Like, I feel I have such guilt when I ask someone to pay for something that I've created, because at the end of the day, who does it really belong to? Like, yeah, I've put my time and energy into it, but if it was for students in my school, does it not then belong to my district? Because they paid me to create it. I wouldn't have necessarily created it without the job that I'm in. It's sort of like if I'm a coder for Google and I decide I want to write a program, it doesn't belong to me. It belongs to Google. And I think as teachers, sometimes we fail to see that. Go ahead. Brad's making a space. I can see him in the podcast here.
So I agree with you. If if I'm developing something that's intended to benefit my school and it is then therefore, you know, there's an argument that can be made. Now, to be fair, I'm going to put this out there publicly. My coding is done on my time outside my district, yeah. And I might let my school use it for free, but I do my coding outside because I am very intentionally careful about that line.
Yeah.
So I just want to put that publicly on the internet. But with that said, I see your point. The difference I would say is Google, as is well known for, uses Genius Hour, but the people that develop something during that time get put in positions in which they are now making significantly more money because of the product they developed that's making Google money. I'm not making money because my school is saving 50 hours a week using the extension I'm using. I'm not getting any percentage of that 50 hours back. I'm still making exactly what I was making before, but I'm also saving my teachers and my administrators and whoever else a boatload of time. Right. So I think there's a compensation difference in our field. And not, I understand this is probably more of an American problem than a Canadian problem, yeah. But even still, there's not a compensation structure in place that mm-hmm. would say your value is all these extra hours on top of the fact that you're teaching kids mm-hmm. and your value is you're developing those lessons that teachers across the entire district or state or province or whatever are using. So here's some extra money to justify that. If I'm developing a product that is benefiting an entire company, I'm being compensated for that at the company level.
Right.
I'm not being compensated for that as a teacher.
Do you think that we should compensate teachers like that?
I would love to bargain my own contract.
Oh my gosh, I say that a lot.
Personally, I would love to bargain my own, but I can't seem to get rid of my union. So here we are.
But how would that shift our culture as educators?
To be honest, it would be awful. To be honest, it would be terrible.
I think
because the next media story, at least in the US, would be every teacher in the US is trying to take more of your tax dollars.
Yeah.
Like that would be the next headline.
And maybe maybe because we're publicly funded. But I didn't actually go there. I went more to how teachers can be really unkind to one another. And well, why should you be making more for this? And I actually explained to a student recently that the extracurriculars we do, I'm like, I'm not making more money doing this. They're like, you're not paid to stay. And no,
you don't get like the extra $5 a paycheck or whatever to stay
for
an extra 2 hours.
No.
You don't get that in Canada.
No,
I get that. But your base pay is also like at least 75 times higher than ours. So
yeah,
I guess there's that to consider.
We are paid in Canadian dollars. So it's not.
Yeah. I mean, you get significantly more loonies than I do. I don't get any loonies.
You get zero loonies. I bet. Zero loonies.
Zero loonies.
I get a couple of loonies. I have to work with a lot of them.
Jen, thank you so much for joining me on this first part of your two-part episode. I loved our chat so much, I just couldn't bring to cut any of it. Jen is actually only the third Planning Period guest to get a two-part episode. Can you name the other two? The first person to tweet out this episode and tag the two other people who have already had two-part episodes will get a Planning Period podcast sent to them. To connect with Jen, find her on Twitter and Instagram at @virtualgif. Also, you can find her podcast, Shooks and GIF, at bit.ly/shooksandgif, or visit her website, virtualgif.com. And of course, do not miss the second part of her episode, which will air next week. If you have comments or questions about the show, you can always connect with me on Twitter or Instagram. I'm at Brad Shuffler. I love to hear from you guys there, and that's also a great place to connect if you'd like to be a guest on the show. Or check out the feedback page on my website that gives you additional options for feedback, which you can find at bradstreffler.com/feedback. Until next week, make someone that's not a teacher better understand what we do as teachers. Music for the Planning Period podcast is the song Vicious by Kevin MacLeod, used under Creative Commons. You can find him at incompetech.com. The Planning Period podcast is also a proud member of the VoiceEd Radio Network, a 24-hour radio network all about education all the time. VoiceEd Radio. Your voice is right here.